Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
The other thing is, if you're on medications, taking any kind of prescriptive medications or even Tylenol, our liver uses same pathways, uses certain enzymes, chemicals to get rid of essential oils that you are using for your medications. So two things could happen. You may not be able to have the appropriate effects of your medication that you're on. So you may be receiving less of your prescribed medication, or you may be receiving too much. So both of those things can be of concern.
Hey there, I wanted to, before we start the episode and even the intro, I wanted to put in another plug for this episode. I really think this is a super important episode. So please, if you are somebody who sells essential oils, uses them for your family, shares them, I really recommend you listening to this information to have in your toolbox of awareness or to share with other people, help clients to be safe. There is no question that essential oils are an amazing tool and people have had amazing results. But I also know people who have great concerns over some of the information that's being put out there that in some cases is having a negative, harmful result. Jan is all for the use of essential oils and she is a fantastic resource. So please do utilize her as well. Check this out. This is Essential Oil Safety 101 and beyond. I certainly learned new stuff and was reminded of some things that I needed to be reminded of. So please check it out. Hey everyone, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance podcast. I am excited to welcome Jan Tomaino back with us again. She was with us on episode 52 talking about what it means to be a holistic nurse. And we did talk about some of her essential oils training. But this time we look at safety and we got into a lot of great stuff. So Jan uses essential oils with her nursing. She currently does education here in Minnesota live in person. I don't know if I asked her if she does things like live webinars or that kind of stuff out and about in other places, but if you're not here in Minnesota, it's worth an ask. She'll talk about this in our discussion as well, but she works with both people in the clinical field as well as if you are somebody who does doTERRA or Young Living, she will get small groups together to do education. And I highly encourage, if you are using them, whether you're a doTERRA person or Young Living, or you use essential oils for your family, for yourself, or if you use them in your practice, check this episode out. There's so much fantastic information in here. And the Coursera course, I'm going to mention this, and I will post this in the notes at least for sure, is called Aromatherapy, Clinical Use of Essential Oils. So it's a 6-week course. It's fairly inexpensive. So even using it for your own personal use, we're hearing so much more about essential oils in just everyday life. There's so many more people into them and working with them, and it's fantastic. But there are definitely, as you heard in the beginning statement, it's something to think about that there's a lot more interactions. And she'll talk a lot about that and what she's hearing from some other practitioners and what they're seeing from folks. So again, it's just raising our level of awareness. If you know Jan or you have listened to the other episode, you know that she loves essential oils and the power that they have for people, but has a lot of concerns over them being overused or used in a way that might cause harm. And she has so much information and so much studying under her belt about this. So we're going to talk about what we actually get and the bioavailability of essential oils when it comes to ingesting, inhaling, topical use, how to use topical use safely, what to use for carrier oils, how to store them in your fridge and why. There's a couple really cool reasons to do that and how to do that so your food doesn't necessarily end up tasting like your essential oils. A lot about kids, pregnant moms, nursing moms, the safety around ingesting and putting them on our skin, diffusing. She talks about specific oils, oils that we should be aware of and be careful with. Also sustainability around oils. You know, we're all kind of looking for how do we be more sustainable and do the right thing for our planet, use resources wisely. And she talks about some of the challenges that are happening with that as well that you might want to be aware of. So much great information. If you have any curiosity or using essential oils at all, I would highly recommend checking this episode out. She has really done her homework to make our lives easy. So please enjoy. Before we dive in, I want to thank you all for listening. And please, if you are on Facebook or you're getting the emails for these episodes, if you have anybody who's interested, please pass it on. The way that we help the podcast grow and help people find information is sharing the episode and reaching more people. Commenting on the episode on Facebook actually also helps it reach more people as well. So if you like it, post a comment, share it with folks. And if you have any additional questions about essential oils for Jan, don't hesitate to put that in the show notes, either on the website or the Facebook post. And if she does not see it, we will definitely make sure she gets that question. A quick reminder that Listen Local, the Wellness Renaissance Podcast Partay event, is happening June 27th. It's coming up quick, so please do get your tickets. Help us know that you're coming so we can make sure that we have everything ready for you when you get there. Help us make it a great evening. We're going to do a live podcast. We're going to have some fun trivia and some great prizes. I know some of the prizes that we have. We have a few books by authors that we've had on the podcast. We have a massage or manual therapy session. We have a coach that has given us an hour of her time to get a chance to really get to know her. Some socks of varying types. So yes, socks, the things you wear on your feet. That's what I know of so far, but I believe some more exciting things are coming as well from things I am told. Getting your ticket, you'll get an entry, and also you'll be entered into a drawing as well if you become a Patreon supporter. Please do consider, if you like the work that we're doing, $1 a month, less than a cup of coffee, a lot less than a cup of coffee. You can support the podcast and help us keep this thing rolling. So I'd love to have you join us in the Wellness Renaissance community and support the work that we're doing and get it out to more people and help people find the path to their best health. So thank you so much for that. Go to wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can check out all the other episodes available to you, many different topics. Just take a scroll on through and see what else excites you if you haven't checked out the podcast. And if you're new, we love new people. So thank you so much for listening. You can also get your tickets to the Listen Local event on that website. And if you scroll down, you will also see the button that says Become a Patron. And that is where you join Patreon and become part of our little family and get all the additional little pieces that are there and in the works. We've got some cool stuff coming up too. So look forward to that, those of you who are on Patreon. All right, let's dive in. There's so much great information here. Enjoy. Jan Tomaino with Orange Blossom Healing Arts. Welcome back, Jan.
Thank you very much, Judy.
I'm excited to have this conversation. We're going to talk about essential oils and the safety of essential oils, which is essential oils are such a big thing lately. I mean, it's fun to see the information out there, but it's also a little scary when you start to hear stories of people having issues or you start to understand the interactions. And so I want you to talk about that. But first, let's just talk about one of the fun things. And you talked about this the last time you were on, but you have a Coursera course.
I do.
That talks about all of this stuff as well.
Right. So my Coursera course, and you can find it at Coursera.org and just type in on the search aromatherapy. It's one of five courses that the University of Minnesota put together for Coursera. So Coursera is an online platform. They offer numerous classes and degrees and some master degrees, and it's kind of a fun way to learn. It caters to people who are busy. And so these courses, all five of them together, produce a certificate. Each one of them separately is a six-week, most of them are six-week courses that just run in succession. So 6 weeks is done, another 6 weeks. but you take it however you want. And my course is equivalent. It offers 15 continuing education credits for nurses, which is a significant amount. And it focuses on aromatherapy towards healthcare. But anybody can take it. So you don't have to be a healthcare practitioner, provider, work in healthcare to take it. But it just has an aim towards that because we're talking about symptom management and the safe use of essential oils. And as a nurse, it's very important that we use safety when we're talking about essential oils and using with our patients.
Yeah. Well, how cool is that? Like, if you're somebody who uses oils, whether you're a mom or you're thinking about your own family or how to benefit from yourself, but use them safely, or if you're selling essential oils.
Right.
Coursera, just out of curiosity, because Coursera used to be you could take a course for free or you could pay a certain amount of money to get a certificate. Am I correct that now it's you pay like a monthly?
Right. And I don't know exactly how all the courses run. I just know that this particular series charges $39 a month, but you can take as many courses as you want within this 5 course. So if you want to do some of the reading and the work, and there's not a ton of outside work for any of these courses, it's a lot of videos. Some are just kind of PowerPoint and points and discussion, and others in person type of, or on camera, and different interviews and that sort of thing. But at the most, if it took you 2 months to take a 6-week course, it would be $78.
Oh, wow.
So you can also audit it. I don't think you can do the projects that's associated with it, but I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
So audit is for free.
Okay.
But I think you, even for the cost of $78, it's pretty darn good.
Right.
And especially if anybody's looking for continuing education credits.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And great mm-hmm. information. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So essential oils, let's talk about that. Because I know, obviously they're just around. There's just more people doing essential oils these days. And we're talking about how to take them, how to use them on our body, how to inhale them, how to drink or ingest them. So let's just talk about what, straight out of the gate, what are the concerns that you have having, you know, some deep education into this?
So for people who don't know me, I am a certified clinical aromatherapist, so I do have a lot of education behind me, and I have my nursing doctorate in integrative health and have also studied aromatherapy at the university level, and I teach aromatherapy for the University of Minnesota as well. Like I said, I'm geared towards healthcare, but I'm geared towards safety. And I have major concerns. One thing, I am so excited that people are using essential oils and they appreciate them and they're finding benefits from them. However, there is a massive overuse of essential oils. And I always challenge people to use less than what they are. And I would bet they would get similar effects, and oftentimes they do. So there is this term called bioavailability. When we are receiving something IV, 100% of that product goes into our blood circulation. Mm-hmm. So that's considered 100% bioavailability. When we ingest, it's somewhere near 90% of essential oils or most things that is then circulating in our blood. But there's a lot of issues that may happen with ingesting. When we inhale essential oils, it's somewhere between 40 and 70% that is circulating in our blood. Plus, there are other interactions that happen within the synapses of our brain with the inhalation process that are fantastic, and we get awesome effects from that. And then topical, it's approximately 10%. It could be less, could be more. But remember, when we use topical essential oils, we're also inhaling them. So we're getting much more effects if you are putting them near where you can smell them as well. So my biggest concern right now is with people ingesting essential oils willy-nilly. And I just want to say that I don't say that there's a never-never for ingesting of essential oils. However, The promotion of essential oils right now with ingesting are being done in a very unsafe manner by people who really don't know anything about it. And large companies are really promoting them without people being educated in them. And I think it's becoming worse, and there is some big major concerns. So when we ingest something, there are many things that happen in our body to get rid of any kind of product. So our body's got this great detoxification system, and primarily it's our liver. And our liver works overtime to get rid of things. So if we're using essential oils, which are 75 to 100% more concentrated than the plant, and so one little drop is a huge, massive amount, our liver has to work to get rid of that. So our kidneys also get rid of things, but the major concern with a lot of essential oils is with the liver. And the other thing is, if you're on medications, taking any kind of prescriptive medications or even Tylenol, our liver uses same pathways, uses certain enzymes, chemicals to get rid of essential oils that you are using for your medications. So two things could happen. You may not be able to have the appropriate effects of your medication that you're on. So you may be receiving less of your prescribed medication, or you may be receiving too much. So both of those things can be of concern. And so people who put drops of essential oils in their water, one drop here and there, certainly isn't going to do much harm, typically. However, what I'm seeing are these massive amount of drops being put in water, and people are told to drink them all day long, or put many drops in a capsule and take them at various times throughout the day. You're talking about using essential oils as a nutraceutical, and people who are advising that don't have the appropriate education behind them. There are people who are trained. I'm not trained in ingestion of essential oils. I know a little bit about it. I would not advise people to use it that way. There are certain places who teach. One company is Franklin Institute. I believe it's franklininstitute.org. They are a higher education place. They teach online and in-person classes, herbal medicine and aromatherapy. They have a course that is specifically for ingesting of essential oils. They also do wonderful research there. It's run by PhDs, and I would say if people really want to learn about ingesting of essential oils, to go there. So if you're using a lot of ingesting, it could be a concern. So there is a naturopath I recently met with in our area who said she is seeing more and more patients come in with gut issues related to ingesting of essential oils. Robert Tisserand, who I've talked about before, he is a huge safety expert on essential oils, internationally known, very well respected in the essential oil world. He's living in Prague right now. And he has told the stories of various people who have contacted him. One woman was using essential oils to treat some metabolic issue that she had. And she got the okay from her doctor. She showed the doctor kind of the recipe that she found on the internet, and he said, sure, try it. Well, her liver enzyme tests on follow-up went way out of whack. And so he advised her to stop doing that, and her liver tests went back to normal. But she never felt different. Mm-hmm. So there's things that happen within our liver and within our body that we don't know. So consider that when you put something on your skin or in your mouth, you get an immediate reaction, right? And you feel it. Mm-hmm. So many of us have put essential oil on our tongue or on our lip and it burns, or you can feel that. We don't feel that in our inside. People who use essential oils in capsules, at least that's better than using them without capsules. So you're protecting your mucosal lining of your mouth and your esophagus as it's entering your stomach. But once the capsule enters your stomach, the acidic nature of your stomach is going to break that apart, and then you'll have essential oil mixing with the water medium in the stomach, and then it has to go through the whole process of our body getting rid of it and our liver getting rid of it. When we inhale, we don't have that same issue. So our body still has to get rid of it, but there is a first pass detoxification type of process that happens with digestion that does not have to necessarily happen when our body is trying to get rid of them in other ways. So inhalation or topical.
Okay, that's interesting.
So that was a lot of information. And it's so again, I just want to say that there is a place for ingestion of essential oils. And what some of the research has shown, peppermint can be used to treat IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome works great. But you need to know how to take the peppermint, and there are preparations that are pre-made, and so they're in appropriate dilutions. There's also on the market in the U.S. and in Europe, Silexa, S-I-L-E-X-A, that is over the, I don't know if it's over the counter in the U.S. or not, but it's lavender use for anxiety.
Oh.
And it's got some good research behind it. But it's different than if you just take lavender on your own ingesting.
Okay.
It's in a preparation that our body can handle.
Okay. So there's other things that are maybe mixed with it or whatever,
right,
that allow it to be
exactly
in an amount and a form that our body can
exactly
can take.
Essential oils are oily. They're fat soluble. Oil and water don't mix. Our
right.
stomach, even though it's acidic, it's a water medium, and it doesn't mix. So.
Well, I think of that when I have taken essential oils and I put a drop of water, the water, you know, the drop sits there.
Right.
Right. I can see it.
Right.
You know, the only way that I've gotten to do is create the little centrifuge of, you know,
right,
trying to mix it in, and you can still see it. And obviously, even if that water, if that drop is on the top, you know, it isn't like, it still diffuses through the water, but there's still this concentration.
Right.
Yeah.
So lime, orange, lemon, or citrus essential oils are used for cleaning agents. So when you consider that, they're used to get rid of, they're like a degreaser.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very effective for that. So think how they eat away at things. And I've had, my favorite story is a nurse when I was doing some education, she said she was told to put some thieves, which is 5 different essential oils, and she put a couple drops in her water, styrofoam cup, and by the time she walked out the door of her meeting room, it had eaten a hole in the bottom of the styrofoam cup.
Uh-huh. I've heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's, though that is a plasticky product,
right,
it's still, we think of how delicate our tissues are,
right,
you know, we're not impervious to that damage. It doesn't go, oh, natural tissue, things are fine here, it's okay,
right. So essential oil companies are major ones, multi-level marketing. There's Young Living, there's doTERRA, there's a couple other large ones that do a lot of promoting for ingesting. And I just want to say, if you're using them for yourself, that's one thing, because you're taking responsibility for yourself. If you are selling them and promoting them without appropriate education to other people, consider that you may be doing some harm and you may not be knowing that. And if we're all using essential oils for health benefits, we want the best. And essential oil companies, the big major ones, they make a lot of money. And so the goal is to make money. So I just want people to really consider that. There are many, many, many good essential oil companies out there. So I don't want to bash Young Living nor doTERRA, because their essential oils are good from what I've seen. They've tested fine. They have, they're good oils. But it's, the problem is, how are we promoting use?
Mm-hmm.
That can be very, very concerning. And my biggest beef right now, and I've encountered it many times recently, as a professional, I'm a nurse, but there are many nurses, there are psychotherapists, there are family marriage counselors, licensed social workers who are promoting unsafe use of essential oils under their license. And I want people to really stand back and really consider that. Do you have the appropriate education to be guiding vulnerable patients in how to use essential oils? Because we are trusted. We are really trusted. And if we are going to be guiding our patients, our clients, we better darn well know what we are talking about.
Right. Right. Well, and I think your point of the whole, the company's goal is to make money and to get it in as many hands as possible. And that is a lot of times under the guise of help as many people as possible. And so, yeah, it's an interesting balance of where you feel like the truth is and where the kind of the push is, you know. And I know on the bottles of the oils, there's the serving size. I mean, they list things to show you the difference of when it's ingestible and when it's not.
Right. So, okay, so the FDA, oftentimes people think of the FDA as our enemy. they really do try to protect us as consumers, but we all have beefs with the FDA. So the FDA, they have oversight over essential oils as cosmetic and as food additives, not as nutraceuticals, unless a company wants it considered as a nutraceutical, as a drug, then they need a whole different pathway to authority to use it as such. And I know many of the companies who used to promote essential oils for a number of things, like even antiviral, antibacterial properties, can't do that anymore, because that you are treating it like a drug. You cannot say that I'm selling lavender and you can use it. It's very highly effective for anxiety. That's promoting it as a drug. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of a catch-22. We all know that lavender can be very calming. It can be wonderful for anxiety. But can I say that on my marketing material? Nope, I can't. And so then the other thing is with the ingesting and like what you're talking about, food grade, all essential oils should be pure. There is this term called therapeutic grade. It means nothing. It's a made-up term. It really means nothing. One company started it. Many of the other companies just jumped on the bandwagon. And so people think that they're getting the best of the best. Therapeutic grade, medical grade, whatever. Those terms don't mean anything. They are not regulated terms under our government, nor any other government internationally that I have seen. But what the USDA does have, the FDA, is a term called GRAS, generally regarded as safe, GRAS. And that, they have a list of essential oils under that, in addition to many other products, that can be used as food additives for flavoring. So when you're considering a drop of essential oil in maybe a huge bowl of something as a flavoring, versus a drop that you are ingesting on its own, those are two different things that we are using them for. And that is not what GRAS was intended to be used for. So it's kind of an issue. I know the FDA has had numerous complaints, and they have been following up on many complaints. So several years ago during the Ebola crisis, the FDA really started cracking down because they were noticing some companies and private distributors were saying that their essential oils cure Ebola. So they had some pretty severe warning letters sent to them. And since then, people have really toned down on what they're promoting. But the FDA, what they do, they watch websites, they watch people's marketing material, they watch what your intended use is for. So there is more of a watchful eye, but there's still a lot going on. And again, it's people who really don't understand the whole science behind essential oils, which is basically what it is. Essential oil is numerous chemical constituents that are combining together to form a synergistic effect, and we can get great therapeutic results from them. But we don't always have to ingest. Mm-hmm. We get great results from inhalation. we can get some very good results from topical use, so sore muscles applying.
One of the thoughts that comes to mind is when we see something that's generally regarded as safe, it's like generally regarded as safe for what or in exactly. what environment, right? And we don't always ask those questions. We trust the situation or,
right.
you know. So I want to get back to, well, so here's one thought on inhalation that I can imagine somebody says, well, I want to ingest it because I've got somebody in my house who's super sensitive mm-hmm. to the inhalation piece mm-hmm. And the scents. And so they figure, well, if I just ingest it, then it's all on me. And right. it's not, they don't have to deal with it.
You don't necessarily get better benefits by ingesting, and you may not get the benefits
right.
at all. You
right.
may get way better benefits by inhalation. So, okay, so there is a thing called direct inhalation where you can have your essential oil up close and personal, put it on a cotton ball, put it on one of those nice little aroma sticks, have it in a little baggie so you can smell it yourself. You get way more benefits from that versus putting it in a diffuser.
Okay.
If you're putting essential oils in a diffuser, you're creating more of an ambiance, an overall general, very dilute effect in the air. But that very dilute essential oil in the air could also have some very detrimental effects on people who cannot tolerate the smell. Either they truly do have some form of a reaction by smelling it. Some people have multiple chemical sensitivities, which I've encountered at a class. I've had two people come through classes in a hospital setting that had to leave. They had to leave the room. We didn't have windows that we could open. Mm-hmm. And very lightheaded, one blood pressure dropped. So they had a history of multiple wow. chemical sensitivities. And these people know that they might encounter that. But do we have the right to diffuse out in our open places? If we're in our home and you have somebody who lives in your home who can't tolerate it, be mindful of that. But if you're in a public place, you're in an office setting, you're in a hospital. Some hospitals allow it on their nursing units. And we always advise, and I've taught in clinical settings, that that should not be allowed because certain people have such detrimental effects from it. I know several people who get headaches from lavender. People think lavender is fine, it's benign. But we all have different likes and dislikes, and why should we invade the personal space of somebody when we don't need to?
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes it's just a smell has an emotional attachment, which can be negative.
Exactly.
Or it makes you feel nauseous, or yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you brought up such a valid point. So our smell system, our olfactory system, is so powerful. Those emotional responses to a smell are incredible. Because we can think back to a time, if you walk into a building and it reminds you of your elementary school, mm-hmm. and just think how it brings back. Maybe that was a bad time. But there's certain smells that bring us to a very good feeling, and there's certain smells that may have bring you to a traumatic event. And this happens in the limbic part of our brain, seat of our emotion, and it's very, very powerful.
Wow, yeah. Well, yeah, and we think about, like you say, they think of childhood memories or the smelling the perfume of somebody that you know. Or,
right.
you know, I know for me, if I walk into an Indian restaurant with particular spice combination smell, it's like it brings me right back to, it's like, oh, I remember being in India in this place. You know, it's just, boom, I'm there.
Exactly.
I'm very, very sensitive to that, yeah. And so one of the things, and I want to get to some specifics too of what to use, what to avoid, or, mm-hmm. or smells, or whatever to be aware of, and how to put it on our skin. But maybe to play slight, not exactly devil's advocate, mm-hmm. in thinking of why these things occur. So mm-hmm. here's some of the things that I see that has drawn me to go do what I'm going to do, mm-hmm. or sometimes just truly to go find somebody who I believe is far more expert mm-hmm. in, you know, in their field. When you have doctors who say, I don't know about that, so that must not be any good. Mm-hmm. Or when we do have that feeling of, well, okay, we know we use oregano for cleaning, so it's got antibacterial,
right.
Antibacterial qualities. So then this logically would go for this other thing, you know, that I might be able to use it for, to ingest or whatever the case might be. And because sometimes the FDA, and I know the word cure is a dangerous word, right? Mm-hmm. But when, you know, how we use language can be very frustrating because you feel mm-hmm. like you can't get the right information out of people. You can't right. tell somebody, well, if you eat oranges, you know, you can say vitamin C helps a cold. I'm not sure if you can even say it cures a cold. But if you say an orange cures, helps a cold, that's like a bad thing, right? So I think there's these languages and the legal aspects of things right. that cause people to go, well, I have to make a lot of decisions for myself because I don't feel like I can figure out how to get the correct information.
Yes.
So we end up playing doctor for ourselves.
Yes.
Because we can't, you know, I mean, the amount of times I had doctors tell me that doesn't work. That's not going to do anything for you. That's not helpful. That modality doesn't work. And that is what is the modality. That's what I've gained my health from. Mm-hmm. It's hard for us as the general public sometimes to not go, well, you know what? I got to figure this out for myself. And mm-hmm. then, and I agree with you. I mean, my gosh, it's the whole, we have to figure how to get the best education. So at least we're knowing those lines, know the right questions to ask, know where the lines are, where we're taking our life into our own hands a little bit, mm-hmm. if we choose to do so, but know, okay, wait a minute, this is just a bad idea.
Right.
So
it's an issue. And I dealt with this for so long too, because there's a very few doctors, nurse practitioners who practice in a very holistic model that many of us appreciate. And even when they do, they don't know how to use everything.
Right.
I mean, it's a
lot
big, wide world out there.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to figure out what is the good information, what is the bad information, when I work with my university students, one of their assignments is actually to critique a website. And they have to see, you know, do I find this information credible? And why do I find it? There are specific guidelines that they have to use. But I want us all to think about that with looking at different websites. Look at it with a critical eye. Who is the author of the website? Who is putting out this information? What is their specific background in relation to the product? So if they are selling a product, the author of it, so are they an aromatherapist? What is their background on essential oils? So that is one thing. The other thing is that just keep in mind when you're gathering information from product websites, the goal of typically of these websites are to sell products. So it might not be your best source of information. You might start there and see what they say, but then do your homework. There's other places to go for help. I oftentimes will send people to aromaweb.com. It's a very good website with very simple information about essential oils. It doesn't dive in real deep. It depends on what you're looking for, but they have a search tool and you can plug in many things, and it's a great starting place for lay people. It's or professionals, just as a starting place. I just want to caution people with the amount of information that you are getting from a website that sells, no matter what it is. I don't care if it's herbs or if it's essential oils or it's something else. You just need to go figure out. And then also keep in mind that our practitioners, so nurse practitioners, our physicians, our naturopaths, they don't have all the answers on everything. They can certainly guide you, but you might not get the appropriate information. I'm just like you, Judy. I'm out there searching for what should I be taking? What shouldn't I be taking? And I've come to the conclusion that I don't want to do harm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the interaction of some things. And I think what happens is people end up taking too many of things, looking for anything. They're just searching.
Right.
I had a period of time off a number of years ago when I was healing from something, and I started watching Dr. Oz. Mm-hmm. And I loved him before that, but as I watched each day and he had a new product, I thought, wow. It's like, wow, my kitchen would be full,
yes.
My table. So as good as these products are, how much do we really need? How much should we take? What should we be doing? And if we are taking them for ourselves versus guiding someone else, that's one thing. But my other safety concern is when we're talking about children and pregnant women, mm-hmm. that's a huge concern. Or lactating women, those who are breastfeeding. Because essential oils cross the milk supply, they cross over the placenta, so it's affecting your fetus. Certainly, certainly, certainly do not ingest if you are pregnant. Please, do not ingest if you're pregnant. Do not let your children ingest essential oils. Use essential oils very sparingly and know which essential oils are safe for children, there's several that we can use, but...
Which ones should people really be, like, if you're having a diffuser and you know you're having a pregnant person come over, is there anything you should be aware of and not, same with kids?
Diffusers are less of an issue okay. with pregnancy because, again, it's diffusing into a wide open space, so you're not getting as much therapeutic value. You may be getting some, but things that are that can be toxic, and even things like thieves and what is the other one? On guard, mm-hmm. maybe. I would use that sparingly in a house. And typically with diffusers, consider that really the guideline is to diffuse for about 30 minutes and then off for a couple hours. We need the time for things to clear out. And consider what you're using them for. Are you using them to clear the air and to get rid of germs? You don't need to run that all day long.
Mm.
So,
okay.
Again, diffusers aren't as much of a concern. However, with babies, and especially newborns or small infants, I would not diffuse in the same room as they are. I would be much, much more cautious with babies. And then there is this issue with peppermint, because it has menthol in it, and there's other essential oils that have menthol, or it's called 1-8-cineol, that provides it with that strong, potent smell like you smell in eucalyptus. So the 1-8-cineol, the menthol, can potentially cause a bronchoconstrictions, which can close off the airway, in small children and babies. And so we want to be sure that those essential oils are nowhere near the face of small children. There's a reflux that our body has, and it takes a while for it to be fully in effect up to the point of 6 years old. It may be immature. And so I always advise people to keep things with menthol or 1-8-cineol, again, eucalyptus, peppermint, rosemary also has it, and there's a few others, but those are the common ones. Keep them away from children's faces that are under 6 years old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff we don't even know, right?
I know.
Yeah. Well, and we think about, you know, cinnamon, for instance, is one of those oils that's just like, it's so intense. I mean, we think of Red Hots, the candy, and things like that. I mean, it's just like, you know. It's intense stuff.
It is. And the chemical component that causes some of the issues in there is called cinnamaldehyde. And it can be very toxic to our skin.
Okay.
Not to everybody's. It can cause some significant burns and some significant sensitivities on some people, but maybe not others. And if you are one of the lucky ones who you've put it on your skin and you've not had issues, just be aware that over time you could have some issues down the road. So people who use things continually can build up sensitivities. And once you've had that sensitivity, it may turn into a full-blown allergy, and you'll never be able to use that product again.
Wow.
And so the biggest issue, so something like cinnamon, is putting it undiluted on your skin. So even diluted can cause some issues, but diluting it and something like cinnamon needs to be what we consider like a 1 to 2% at the most, probably more like 1%, which is one drop in a teaspoon of a carrier oil. So okay. One drop per 5 mils of something. And that's probably the most concentrated that you should ever put it on your skin. So when you're putting that on your tongue or undiluted on your skin, beware that you may be creating some havoc down the road.
So for putting things on our skin, I want to talk about what things are good and bad and sun entering into that. But the thing that I'm curious about is, because we're told use a carrier oil.
Yes.
Tell us how to do that. What are good carrier oils? And then how do we like store this? Is this something that you can use the measurements you're talking about and put it in something? Or do you have to make it up each time?
Okay. So let's first talk about shelf life of essential oils. So people don't realize that their essential oils don't last forever. Majority of essential oils can last for 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
And you can find this information on AromaWeb. They've got great information on shelf life. Our essential oils that last the least, like 1 to 2 years, and I always guide people, like, be careful beyond a year, are any of our citrus oils and pine oils, and there's a few more. They become oxidized. Any heat, which heat can be as simple as room temperature, heat or warmer air, how often you open up that bottle, because it allows oxygen to get in. So heat and oxygen can create that oxidation. And the essential oils tend to cause more sensitization when you use them on your skin, where they may not if before that. So it's always a good idea to store your essential oils in a refrigerator.
Okay.
But know that if you store them in your refrigerator with your food, they should probably be in another container that's closed, because your food may end up tasting like essential oils.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah. It can happen. It's also a good safety mechanism, because for children, if you have children in your home, it's always an issue with children getting into essential oils. And as a former PEDS intensive care nurse, I guarantee you, small kids do not taste something, typically they'll drink it.
Mm-hmm.
And poison control has had a number of increased calls because of accidental ingestion of essential oils by children. And it's not because their parents are giving them to them, it's because they are drinking them themselves. Okay, so keep your essential oils in a container in your refrigerator. And then to use them topically, we want to dilute them in a carrier oil. Carrier oil can be as simple as olive oil, or it can be an unscented lotion. It, as like a lotion, actually helps essential oils be absorbed into our skin a bit more readily, because a lotion has water mixed in with the oil as well. But oils, there's almond oil, there's jojoba oil, which is J-O-J-O-B-A. That's my favorite. It's actually a waxy medium. It doesn't go rancid.
Oh, okay.
Almond oil is a good one. It can become rancid. Just coconut oil. I love coconut oil, even the thick coconut oil, and that is very stable. It's great for mixing like a chest rub. So thinking of something like essential oil of eucalyptus. So thinking like Vicks, putting on your chest, or you can put it on wounds. And coconut oil has antibacterial properties as well. And then there's fractionated coconut oil, which is also very stable. That is one that we typically will use in the healthcare setting. So the companies that we buy from will typically have a pre-diluted essential oil. When you dilute, typically it's from 1 to 5%. Children and small children need 1% or less. 5% typically is more for pain, we're talking about. So this is how you calculate it. One drop per teaspoon or 5 mils is 1%. Two drops per that same amount is 2%. Three drops, 3%, up to 5%. So a 5% dilution would be five drops in 5 mils or 1 teaspoon. And then you can calculate that out. You can multiply it to get into your ounce. So basically it's 6 drops per ounce, and 6 times 5 is 30. So 30 drops per ounce is for a 5% dilution. So if you just consider the 1 drop per 5 mil and just want to calculate it out, okay, from there, it's fairly easy. And then for painful areas, and if you're not sensitive to the essential oil, I guide people to go up slowly to 10%. So like for if you're using something for headache, and I know people will often put peppermint or lavender on their temples for headaches undiluted, you're way better off diluting them and you get the same effects. So you can use like a 10% dilution for headaches on your temples, the back of your neck.
And if we were to make this ahead of time, we could put it in a little jar.
Yes, put it in a little jar. You can buy the little containers, the little bottles, like essential oils come in.
Yeah.
Or you can use one of your empty bottles. If you buy plastic, just know that you don't want to keep that plastic for longer than 6 months. And be sure that you buy the PET, the PET, that is less degrading. It's more environmentally safe. And then once you blend your essential oils, it's always the best idea to keep it in the refrigerator as well. Your blend will be as good as either the shelf life of the essential oil or of the carrier oil that you put it in. So if you're blending something in an almond oil tends to have a less of a shelf life, and you'll smell that rancid smell.
Okay.
Then your blend isn't good anymore.
Right.
So I like to blend things in small little batches, and sometimes blending essential oils together first and then putting it in a little bottle. So if I made a headache blend, one of my favorite is to use peppermint, lavender, and sweet marjoram together. And if I make a blend with those three and then use drops of that in a diluted essential oil, and you can buy these little nice little roller bottles.
Oh, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking with coconut oil, the fractionated coconut oil is more liquid.
Yes.
And the regular coconut oil,
Spur.
That could be a little trickier
right?
to create that mixture.
Right.
With.
Right. And you just, you know, you can mix it with a little stick, a chopstick or something like that. And if you're just using it for yourself, just mix it with your finger.
Right.
If it's just you using that. And in a little jar, it works well.
Okay. Nice.
And yeah. Keep it covered.
Oh, right.
Because essential oils will evaporate. They dissipate into the air. They're very light.
Right. Right. Yeah, not to mention the oxidation.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, so don't take that wild orange and set it on your desk and leave it open.
Right.
Right. Now, that's one that we often take, throw a drop in our hands,
right.
rub our hands together, smell. Would that be better off still to use that carrier oil?
So I know a lot of people do that, and you're getting such a great direct inhalation. If you do that, I would wash your hands right away.
Okay. Afterwards.
So,
okay.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, it is a very portable way to do it. Is there an easier way to do it? Because you don't, without having to put a drop out. If you put a drop on a cotton ball and you put it in a little covered container or a baggie, that drop's going to last you all day.
Wow. Okay.
And instead of putting drop. So we talked about sustainability before as well. So
yeah. So talk a little bit about that, because we didn't record that part. So we're thinking about essential oils. One of the advantages is the intense concentration. You know,
right.
how many cups of peppermint are in a drop of oil?
I don't remember offhand.
But it's a lot.
Peppermint. It is a lot. So the most amount of plant material it takes is rose petals. It takes 2 tons. So it takes 2,000 pounds of just rose petals to get 1 pound of essential oil, which in itself is a lot. A pound of essential oil, 16 ounces, is a lot of essential oil.
Right.
Considering we buy little 5 mil bottles at a time. And lavender takes approximately 150 pounds of the flowering tops to get 1 pound of essential oil. So even that's a lot of plant material.
Right.
And I know that lavender's price is on the rise because of so much use of it. And again, I think a lot of it's overuse. So some of the essential oils that are on the endangered kind of list, they're not, there's different terms that are used, so they're not all endangered, but they're in various forms of it. Sandalwood is really high on that list, and there's a lot of issues that are happening in countries that produce sandalwood essential oils. People are stealing land. They're doing many things underhanded, black market. We want to be sure that we get sandalwood from a reputable source that really pays attention to that. And there's different, well, there's so much that's involved with this whole topic, so it's probably too much for this podcast. So, but sandalwood, there are ways that sandalwood is being grown and has reputable countries out there that have practices that are growing. Australia has started growing some very good sandalwood. So certain companies, we want to just make sure that we are buying from good companies that know their sources of the essential oils, and they're not buying on the black market. And we also want to be sure that we're not getting adulterated essential oils, because these products then tend to have more adulterated essential oils. Frankincense has some issues, as does rosewood. So, and there are ways that they are getting the essential oils that are much more sustainable. But those three essential oils, I want people to really pay attention to. And please don't overuse them. Use very little. I use very, very, very little sandalwood, if any, right now. And another essential oil to use in place of rosewood is called hoewood. It has the same chemical constituents, and it smells almost identical.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a good one to use. Frankincense, just be very cautious. There's a little portion of that on my Coursera course. Dr. Linda Helcone did part of the video on that section, speaking mostly to frankincense. And then I want to get back to skin, the skin irritation as well.
Yes.
We didn't talk about phototoxicity.
Oh, gosh. Yes, that's right.
So
okay.
Phototoxicity can occur, and that's what happens when an essential oil that you've applied to your skin, whether it be diluted or not, and you then go into UV light, whether it be sunlight or tanning bed. And this can occur up to 24 hours. It's typically within 18 hours, but I would be cautious up to 24 hours. You can have a significant burn where that essential oil was applied. Significant. And what it does, it actually damages the DNA. So the essential oil goes down and it affects the DNA. It's like it's being stored, and all of a sudden you go into that sunlight or to that tanning bed, and it causes a burst. Some people will notice increased pigmentation, so it's just brown. Some people will get horrific burns, and you just don't know. So my advice is to never use any of our citrus oils except for orange. Orange and mandarin do not have the phototoxic effects. Don't use them on your skin that you're going to be exposing to the sun. So sometimes it's a good idea not to even use them in the summer if okay. they're going to be on any exposed area. I know a young woman who had significant burns on the side of her neck. She put bergamot, and bergamot is one of the highly, highly phototoxic essential oils. She put bergamot on her neck, such as like a perfume, and then had her hair in a ponytail and went out into the sun and had burns that lasted for about a week on the sides of her neck.
So, amazing. Yeah. I mean, everything is so complex.
I know.
You know?
I know. It makes it difficult. But again, you can inhale those essential oils and get great effect. You don't have to worry about it.
Right. Or I suppose if you want to wear it as a perfume, could you put it just slightly on your clothes collar on the outside?
Right.
So you don't have to have it on your skin directly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That one. Yes. Absolutely.
It is a very complex... I mean... We live in a very complex world, and we want to simplify things because we just want answers. I mean, it's not, you know, for the practitioners who, well, for practitioners who don't necessarily know because they don't know, or the people who are just trying to help people, you know, it isn't that they're trying to be bad or you know, they're getting their information sometimes from farther above them, from people they trust. And they really are wanting to help.
Right.
But it is just, it's so complex. It's like doctors who don't tell you there's great things out there because they don't know them or they don't know enough about them. So they're like, well, I don't want to speak to that. And instead of saying, I don't know, so I don't want to say anything, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's not okay. It doesn't mean it is okay. Mm-hmm. I just don't know the answer. When they just say no, you know, so we have this system of, especially those of us who have been dealing with health issues and really trying to search, there is this system of distrust that we have mm-hmm. and that we are trying to search for our own thing and trying to find the right answer. And then thinking of how much science and how science has sometimes been adulterated due to the people mm-hmm. wanting the outcome. And I know I have people in my life who I know research to the nth degree who come out with very different answers. Mm-hmm. I believe both of them are completely well informed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, are they willing to learn something new? Mm-hmm. You know, but I know people who have come up with the exact opposite answer, but I know they have both gotten there from working their keisters off to figure mm-hmm. it out. So how do we as the average person do life? It really is challenging.
I agree. And I'm hoping that we can try to keep it as simple as we can, because mm-hmm. does it do us any good to have 100 products sitting on our table or in our cabinets?
Right.
I don't think it does.
Right. Right. It's figuring out what works. Mm-hmm. What do you really need it for? Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, this is a situation where not ingesting it is a benefit. Like, not only are you not hurting yourself, mm-hmm. you're also getting more of the product.
Right.
Which is a hard, I think, for us to understand a little bit, because we think ingesting is the best way to get it into our system.
Yeah.
Right? Right. But I also think of how oil works, right? And it kind of slips and slides. And mm-hmm. if it doesn't mix mm-hmm. well, it could go all the way through you.
Right.
And you don't necessarily gain the effect of that.
Right. Right. So I think, like, with ingesting, some of the biggest benefits are to do with the GI tract. So if you have some issues related to your gastrointestinal things, mm-hmm. or maybe some type of internal infection, but I do not have the qualifications to guide people on that, and mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to say so. So I want other people to really stand back and really think about what they are guiding others to do. Again, it's one thing that what we do for ourselves, right?
Right.
But when we are guiding others, and especially if we are a professional, we are under the board of something within the state of Minnesota or Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot to know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is there anything else we need to cover? Any other basics you want to toss out there just to have people aware of?
Well, a question that you had before was about grapefruit. Does the essential oil of grapefruit cause the same harm in case anybody is ingesting or using it inhalation topically with medications? Because there is that grapefruit juice that has interactions with some medications. The essential oil does not have the same issue as the juice does. So I still say don't ingest it, but you're not going to run into that issue. And I would say inhale it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's still good to know,
right?
If somebody is afraid, oh, I can't drink the grapefruit juice. Well, can I use my
right.
grapefruit oil?
Yes.
So that's good to know.
Yes. And the other thing I think is for people to really use cautions, wintergreen, birch essential oil are two essential oils that people will often use for pain that can have significant interactions with anybody who's on a blood thinner such as Coumadin. So use great caution. I wouldn't use that if anybody who has a bleeding issue or is on medication for any type of bleeding issue.
Okay. And these are good to know of the, you know, you go innocently to a party or whatever, to an essential oils party, and you don't necessarily know.
I know.
And yeah, and you're right. I mean, drugs and interactions can be crazy. And at the same time, I want somebody to get the right answers, because I don't want them to not use something that's of huge benefit.
I know.
So it's, again, back to the example of Coumadin. Well, how many doctors say, well, oh, sorry, you can't have greens.
I know.
While you're on Coumadin and in trying to keep yourself from cancer. Well, what do you need? You need the best food possible. So that's a case of a doctor not wanting or not having the time to educate you.
Right.
Which is, it's like, that is one of those things that just makes me crazy, because it's like, no, that is their job. And I know it's a systematic problem, but again, those are the things that make us distrust the system, right? It's like, well, if you're not telling me stuff because you don't have time, well, then I got to go figure out my own mm-hmm. research. Mm-hmm. So we need to overhaul the system. If I could just snap my fingers and make that happen, that would be very helpful.
That would be awesome.
Yes. And it is. It is a journey. It is traveling. It's figuring this stuff out and trying to learn what we can learn, but being careful. And this is a huge piece of this ingestion mm-hmm. piece, and just knowing how to try to use these safety, and that there are resources that are maybe hard to find mm-hmm. in, especially with the ingesting. That's not something that's super easily found.
No, it's not. And it takes a lot more time and effort to be educated on right. that.
Well, and you're talking, like you say, you're talking drug interactions. So it isn't a one size fits all answer.
No.
It's a medical intake of what are you taking? What are you eating?
Exactly.
What are you doing? And that this is going to be okay or not okay. And then, like you say, you don't feel it. And I think that sometimes with some of the issues with some of these things is, you know, we in our society, we're concerned about it if it kills us right away, right?
Right.
If we drop over dead in the minute, then it's a horrible thing. But if it's over time, we can't monitor it the same way.
No.
But we also kind of societally kind of look at it different too. But if it's coming up with practitioners hearing and seeing these things, you know, obviously it's going to happen within our lifetime. We need to be careful of, and everybody is different. So
true.
What are the interactions going to be? Some person might be able to take something and ingest it and be okay. And the next person in a year down the road is having issues, or in mm-hmm. a few months down the road is having issues.
That's exactly. So the other good website to look is tisserininstitute.org. He's got great information on safety. Robert Tisserind is the safety expert on essential oils who's known internationally. He's very well respected.
Do you want to spell his last name?
Tisserand. So tisserindinstitute.org.
Okay. Any other websites you want to, precautionary tales?
So I said aromaweb.com
yes.
is excellent. There's two national organizations in the United States that have good information, and as practitioners, aromatherapy practitioners join these organizations as a professional, and they both promote different education. So how much education is included for certifications and that sort of thing. And they have a number of resources. So the first one is NAHA.
Hey, this is Judy coming from the future of the interview. I am going to hop in with the names and the web addresses. We were wanting to make sure we got everything right, so I'm going to insert that here. So NAHA.org is National Aroma Therapy Association. And again, that's NAHA.org. And the other one is Alliance of International Aromatherapists. That is alliance-aromatherapists.org. Again, that's Alliance of International Aromatherapists. And the web address is alliance-aromatherapists.org. There you have it. Back to Jan. Party time. Excellent.
But if you Google AIA aromatherapy, you'll find it.
Okay.
Otherwise, AIA is an architecture organization.
Ah, got it. All right. So make sure the aromatherapy
yes.
is in there. That's very important.
So those two are good. And
okay.
Look at valid research. I'm constantly looking at research, and there's more and more and more research coming out there. We want to really know the evidence behind our using essential oils.
And the sites you gave, are they going to provide the sort of results of the research, or are they going to provide the studies as well?
They don't provide the research unless you join them. But I'm just saying, as a general rule, people can look and they can research. For people who, there's Google Scholar is a good place to search for things. Is it scholar.google.com?
Yeah, I usually look at just Google Scholar, so...
So if you do a Google Scholar and search for that, and then a search under there, you'll pull up some research. Sometimes you can only access the abstracts, but even if you can get that, and sometimes you'll be able to pull up the full research article.
Okay.
So, and if you're lucky enough to work for a healthcare organization that has the medical library, or for a university, then you'll be able to access PubMed. Obviously, PubMed is one that has a lot of the research in it.
And you do classes sometimes and talks around town. So tell us how to find out about your events or connect with you if we have some specific questions, or we've maybe got a group of people we want to have you come in and educate.
Right now, my website is orangeblossomhealingarts.com, and I'm also on Facebook. You can find me searching for Orange Blossom Healing Arts. And I will post anything new. I don't have anything planned this spring or in the summer. In the fall, I have something on the books that'll probably happen in November. It's not posted yet. And it's for just for the community. It'll be sponsored by UWS Continuing Education. And then next February, there will be a class that they are sponsoring once again. I did one last February. And that's geared towards healthcare providers. It's an all-day aromatherapy course, and I just held one at the Hub. So I'm located at the Hub at 1001 East 9th Street. I have office space there, so I'm not there. You can't find me unless you call me or email me, and I hold classes there. So if you contact me, Jan at orangeblossomhealingarts.com, you can find me, and I just need 3 people to hold a class. So as simple as you want it, just to like a little hour class, a 2-hour class, whatever you want. If you're healthcare providers, I'll provide nursing continuing education credits. I have a 7.5-hour course that's geared towards healthcare, and I would like a minimum of probably 5 to do one of those, and that's an all-day class.
So I'm imagining that, you know, like you said, your classes are for healthcare providers, some of them.
Right.
What if somebody is in the place of, you know, say they are a doTERRA Young Living and they're kind of excited to get more information? Would that be?
Absolutely. Okay. I would love for a group of doTERRA Young Living people to come in, and I promise I will not cut down your oils. I will help you to filter through some of the information, and if you're promoting things and how to promote. And so if typically people aren't interested in that, hearing from me, but some of you maybe.
Let's see. it's fun. It's fun to learn more and know how to do, you know, again, our goal is to help people we want them to get the most out of their oils and their experience.
Exactly.
So they keep coming back, but we want them to be safe. That's the whole idea behind all of this, right? So why not?
So just one more thing I want to say is that Young Living is actually the company that got me interested in essential oils.
Uh-huh.
So I have to thank them for that. I had a young coworker who was selling them, and I bought a few. I was getting information from her, but my science side of my mind wanted more information. And as I was trying to search out the information that she was giving me, and to find the studies that she was citing, I couldn't find them. So it worried me a little bit. And within my search, I encountered other information. And it was during that time that I found, as a nurse, if I wanted to use them in my practice under the Minnesota Board of Nursing, I needed to learn from a respected body of knowledge in regards to nursing. So I took a course that was geared towards healthcare. So anyway, I have to thank Young Living for that.
Thank you. This is great. I mean, there's just so much, and I'm sure we could grab any one of these topics and like dive into it for another 6 hours. But this is a great start, and it's a great awareness for people. And it's also, you know, if somebody is having some weird issues and they have been ingesting essential or using them, you know, it may be worth asking a question and maybe talking to your doctor, but maybe talking to somebody else who has some experience too, just to look more deeply and for the accurate answer, because they maybe have more training to know what to look for.
Right, right.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks, Judy.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, you can find Jan at orangeblossomhealingarts.com, also on Facebook. Don't forget about her Coursera class wherever you are in the country/world, quite frankly. You can, I believe anyway, I probably shouldn't say that. I'm just guessing that anywhere in the world you could take a Coursera course, but perhaps that's not true. I welcome you international listeners to hop on and tell me if I'm wrong about that. Anyway, check it out. The resources she mentioned will also be placed in the show notes. So much great information and great things to think about as we're working with our oils. And please do not hesitate to pass this information along to somebody else who might be working with oils and need some awareness or ideas, or just the, you know, the measurements for the carrier oils as well. It's great stuff. So thank you again, Jan, for revisiting us and sharing this information. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much again for listening. Remember, you can check out the other episodes at wellnessrenpodcast.com. And again, if you like the work we're doing here and this information has been helpful or valuable to you in any way, please consider joining the Wellness Renaissance community through Patreon and help us keep this information going. Please know it is not my favorite thing to get out and ask for support through Patreon, but I am also just me by myself. There is no funding coming my way. I'm not supported by any organization, which gives me the freedom to tell you guys what I find valuable to share and have my people say, who are on my podcast as interviewees, say what they want to say and speak their mind. So think of it like public radio. It's kind of like that. It's like supporting public radio, except that I don't have a bunch of people helping me and a base of financial support. I just want to make that clear because I know from talking to people, it's a little confusing sometimes. Thank you so very much for listening, and may you continue to find the pieces that fit productively and safely into your health and wellness puzzle. Until next time, party on!